The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, as you would have heard in the news headlines there, there's been this big increase in the number of children with additional needs waiting on an assessment of needs from the HSE and then waiting on therapeutic services as well. So that assessment and needs waiting list is now over 12,500 and it's up 1,600 in just 3 months. And different shows across the station have been talking about this and what that means for those children waiting and the detrimental impact it can have on them and their families when early intervention isn't a reality. But behind these figures, there's another figure, and it's the amount of children diagnosed with some sort of additional need or neurodiversity today compared to years ago. Brendan Kelly is with me, Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin and the author of Resilience, Lessons from Sir William Wilde and Life After COVID. Brendan, it's always good to talk to you. And listen, I'm very conscious of the need to be sensitive here when we're talking about children with additional needs and the families and often the parents fighting so hard for what they should be entitled to. But can you give us a sense of just how much that overall figure has increased in terms of diagnoses?
Well, Kieran, there's a number of different things going on here, increasing the sort of diagnostic rate for various things over the past couple of decades. I think the first thing to say is that virtually all of these children on these waiting lists would benefit from additional support in education or psychological support and various things. Whether or not it is helpful to diagnose them all with various disorders is something of a different issue. And of course, you don't actually need a diagnosis to access support from special education teachers or special needs assistants, although you do need a diagnosis for special classes or special schools. But what's lying beneath all this diagnosis is perhaps a correction of previous neglect. So, for example, we know that for autism spectrum disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, there was underdiagnosis, and this is now being corrected. And that is important. It is very helpful for many children and indeed many adults who have suffered for a very long time. So that's one of the things that that's happening, a genuine evidence-based correction of underdiagnosis in the past.
Okay, and that can only be welcomed, the idea that there were people in the past who could have been diagnosed and intervention might have made a big difference in their lives. We're doing that now, or we aim to do it. That's the goal, certainly. Yeah. Whether it happens in reality or not, a slightly different debate. Does that explain away all of the increase?
No, it doesn't explain away all of it. Now, it explains some of it, a significant proportion of it. So we know there was particular underdiagnosis of these conditions in girls because boys tend to be louder and a bit more disruptive and therefore got diagnosed with things when girls tended to be quieter. So, you know, there are some good changes going on. On the other hand, the magnitude of the increase in diagnosing is extraordinary. And I struggle to believe, for example, that the rates of diagnosis of, for example, autism disorder, which have gone up overall around eightfold in the past couple of decades, I'm not certain that all of that diagnosing is helpful. For some people, it does help with self-understanding. It helps with access to services, helps them navigate difficult situations and access services. But maybe for other people, it's not as helpful. So, diagnosis is a very powerful thing. It needs to be done with care and attention to make sure it brings benefit to the person rather than simply labels moving around the place without mindful consideration being given to the consequences.
And is it that, the diagnosis is a genuine one, but it's unhelpful to put them into kind of a certain stream or rather that the diagnosis itself is misplaced?
Well, for some people, the diagnosis is misplaced. And for other people, it might be technically accurate, but not in any way helpful. Like even though some of the diagnostic categories are poorly formulated, a good example here, Kieran, is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Now, most people with that, ADHD, they don't actually have a deficit of attention. They have loads of attention, but they're distributing it differently. They have trouble sustaining attention on a single theme, which happens to be 20-something, society is set up to value very highly indeed. So the idea of neurodiversity and everyone being neurodiverse to some degree is actually quite helpful because, you know, societies value particular kinds of attention, and our school system and education system and workplaces are designed for a very narrow kind of neural functioning that a lot of people fall outside of. So, you know, a little bit of fuzziness at the borders of that would be helpful, but I'm not entirely certain that diagnosing vast swathes of the population, when in fact what really needs to change is society, is especially helpful.
And where are people going for their diagnosis in these situations? Because I speak to parents and there's such an awful predicament, kind of waiting and waiting and waiting. And then they often, if they can, if they're lucky enough to be able to afford it, they rely maybe on a private diagnosis. But, you know, I have heard suggestions in other quarters that sometimes these private diagnoses are, how would I put it, are a little too forthcoming.
Well, I mean, the gold standard is the HSE diagnostic system where and processes for which there are these waiting lists, but you can be assured that the staff providing them are properly qualified with continuing professional development and so forth. There are also similar people in the private sector who offer very good services, very reliable and very well qualified to do so. Unfortunately, the private sector is full of people who are capitalizing on distress, frustration and impatience, and some of the diagnostic services, particularly those offered online, are utterly unreliable. So, I mean, the advice has to be to stick with the diagnostic services recommended either by the HSE or by a GP who will be able to distinguish between reliable private and unreliable private sources, and not to go roving around online, or at least not without checking proper qualification and registration, because, you know, people are exploiting the current situation privately online, despite some very, very good private sector and independent sector providers.
Nessa Hill is with us as well, who's the Director of Neurodiversity Ireland. Nessa, I guess, you know, when you have a system with finite resources, and I think most people would accept the resources are not what they should be, but finite regardless, I guess the consequence maybe of people of overdiagnosis is that the people who really need intervention will go without.
Thanks for having me on, Kieran. I first would like to address that suggestion that there is, you know, overdiagnosis or that vast swathes of children are being diagnosed when they shouldn't. We are a group that represent about hundreds and hundreds of parents, and I don't know anyone that would seek out an autism diagnosis or to enter this disability quagmire in Ireland voluntarily or without good reason. I would agree with Professor Kelly, we are starting from such a neglected base. And if I can give you some figures, Kieran.
Yeah.
We have this HSE vision for the health and wellbeing of children and young people that was just published yesterday by Colm Henry. And at 25% of the population of Ireland are under 18. Our population has grown from 4 million to 5.1 million in the last 20 years. But only 4% of our disability budget is spent on under 18's disability services. And I mean from 0 to 18 and from all range of disabilities and from care to residential to services. That's everything. So the HSE vision that I'm talking about, it says that 4% or 48,000 children have complex disabilities, but their data is from 2009. So you can understand, Kieran, this is a massively complex issue. There is much greater understanding of neurodiversity, in particular of autism in girls and different presentations of neurodiversity. For example, Kieran, you couldn't be both ADHD and autistic until 2013. So, I mean, our understanding has exploded, if I can put it that way. But then we also haven't caught up in terms of the types of services and the numbers of people that are required to service those services. So some of the problems that we find are the HSE prioritise physical disabilities. Our CDNTs, our Children's Disability Networks, they're just completely overwhelmed with the need that comes from non-physical disabilities. And as you know, Kieran, the pay and caseloads are really unattractive for those CDNT staff. There are very few graduates going into paediatric therapies. And you know yourself, the legislative basis that provides for the system of support in Ireland is wildly out of date. You know, the Disability Act from 2005 needs overhauled.
Yeah.
There's no provision under EPSA because it's not really enforced. And we don't have the UNCRPD in force. So
that yeah. act as well. I mean, the Disability Act of 2005 is where they set out a 6-month maximum waiting list for an assessment of needs. And in the almost 20 years, two decades since, they've never hit that target, service providers. I mean, that service provides in terms of the state providing that service. Nessa Hill is the Director of Neurodiversity Ireland, and Brendan Kelly is a Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.